Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Hey everybody, I'm Zach Birch. You welcome to Ancast. Joining the show, first time back in quite a while. It's been a little while since we've had him on. Last time he was here, he was talking about a crowdfunding service called Anime Souls. This time he's here talking about J Novel Club, which is a English publisher of light novels. Sam Pinansky. Sam, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi Zach, how you doing? It's been a while, but I'm back and I've got my awesome new company to talk to everybody about.
Yeah, right? So you're a man of many companies. Last time you were here, you were telling us all about Anime Souls, which, for people who may not remember Anime Souls, I thought it was a pretty novel attempt. It was a good effort at figuring out how to get obscure old shows, like catalog stuff, onto DVD and in people's hands, without the usual retail chain, because this stuff generally can't get licensed for that sort of release. So you sort of worked with the Japanese companies and put the stuff online, and then did like a series of crowdfunding sort of campaigns for all of these. And it was an interesting experiment, but it is no more. So can you tell us a little bit about what happened with Anime Souls?
Sure. Well, Anime Souls was an experimental partnership, essentially. It was an LLP between a bunch of Japanese companies to put their own works, essentially, their own classic anime out online, and then get enough people to pledge to buy DVD sets to make it worthwhile to make the DVD sets. And it generally worked okay, but one of the fundamental sort of things that we didn't anticipate from the very beginning was the rise of Kickstarter. And this was right around the time when, you know, Kickstarter had – we basically started Anime Souls right when Kickstarter made it big after the Ouya,
yeah,
if you remember that.
If people remember that,
and
yeah.
So we had a lot of – the whole idea of crowdfunding was really taking off, which was great, of course. But the fact that we had our completely separate platform and then also had to restrict things to just U.S. Canada, it was a lot of things really working against us for having it be a sustainable business. One of the good things, though, about the fact that it was a partnership between many different companies is that there was very low budget and fairly low risk. And in the end, actually, despite the fact that we only succeeded with a couple of shows, like Creamy Mommy, for example, or Dear Brother, which was another one of our successes, that, it actually ended up being something that didn't really hurt any of the companies very much. And I think we did end up, the fact that Creamy Mommy is now on DVD out there in the wild is something that we did manage to accomplish. So that's good. And I also personally learned quite a bit about just the Japanese business models and how the Japanese companies really think about their own works and licensing and all kinds of things, which is really come in handy for me.
Yeah, that's sort of what I wanted to ask you about. Like, so what did you learn about crowdfunding from Anime Souls? Like, specifically, I guess, as it regards anime, as it relates to anime.
Sure. Well, first of all, the two things I learned, I guess, are one is that there really is a core group of fans and passionate fans about pretty much anything. Mm. And it's usually a couple hundred people.
Okay.
So that can be enough to crowdfund, things of $10,000 worth, perhaps. But when you get into like $20,000, $30,000, it becomes kind of difficult to just squeeze that amount of money out of such a small amount of people. But then when you compound that with, for example, territorial restrictions or the fact that as a crowdfunding site, you have trust issues when you're not the big players like a Kickstarter, Indiegogo, that actually is sort of the thing that makes a big difference. So that's why I think ever since Anime Souls, which ended almost 3 years ago now, ever since then, you've seen crowdfunding for anime and things like the Nekopara shorts or the Muv Luv video games, and you've seen that the types of things that can do successful crowdfunding campaigns are the types of works that already have a good built-in hardcore fan base. And well, I guess the thing that Anime Souls didn't have, which is why most of its crowdfunding didn't succeed as much, is that the things it was trying to fund were relatively unknown in the West.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, it was so really it's a bit obscure. Of a catch 22. In order to kickstart something, it has to already be popular, at least with a small core of fans. But if you do have that core and that core exists, then you can use that core to raise the money and also market whatever you're trying to raise the money for in a way that will expand beyond that core. So like anything else, it's a tool. It's one a particular tool that can be useful in certain situations. And of course, the second thing is that ever since then, kickstarting has become much more of an art form in a way, or I guess you could just say it's a business. So to properly interact with the community as you're crowdfunding and to do all the necessary work to describe what the project is and describe the progress on it afterwards and the follow up with updates, it's a very, very labor intensive marketing technique. Is the way I would describe it at this point. And I think that some companies really have it down. Some companies still don't really know what they're getting into when they try it. And it's interesting to see the kinds of things that are crowdfunded these days.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you feel about it? Like, when you see, like, someone's announcing, like, I think it was Yamakon just announced, like, he's going to crowdfund an anime. Like, what do you think? Does that make you kind of roll your eyes? Or are you like, well, okay, if it works, it works?
I've always felt that it, especially when it comes to individual pet projects or projects which are based off a single creator, for example, but not the work itself, that's not really. I almost feel like that would be more appropriate to like a Patreon kind of style where you're supporting a specific artist as opposed to a specific work. And Kickstarter is better for something that's like we have this specific proposal for something and it's based off some previous property, so I could definitely see it be used for like remakes or some sorts of those sorts of things. But when it's specifically also Yamakon and his own personality is such that I guess you could say that it's he's just trying to get more publicity, and that's just one of the ways he's talking about it.
Well, he does like to do that.
Yeah. And you like to enable him, so.
Yeah, me specifically? Me personally?
A-N-N.
Oh, well. Oh, we report the news, and so we're enabling.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's what happens with celebrities.
I see your point.
Celebrities use the media that way.
Well, to that end, though, I mean, would you ever recommend like taking the Kickstarter route for like, say, like so Funimation gave this a shot with Escaflowne last year, and like, I mean, that experiment. Do you think it's viable? Do you think, I guess, like, they worked out for them, but a lot of people sort of took issue with the way that kind of went down. Like,
yeah. I mean, I think that is an example that maybe I was obliquely referring to earlier on.
When I said
that companies that do Kickstarters, but then don't really know what they're getting into in terms of the management time commitment and making sure that the relationships with the fan with the Kickstarter the funders are is consistent and ongoing even after the campaign is over. A really good example of someone who has used this very, very well is the people who did the Time of Eve Kickstarter and then the Skip Beat Kickstarter.
Yeah, we've had her on a few times.
Right, Anne, who's a good friend of mine, and she really understands how to do Kickstarter properly. And I can tell you from personal experience, and that too, that she spends bazillion hours a day just. Working with the fans and communicating with them both during the campaign and after the campaign and forever. And so it's just that's the labor of love shows through. And when it's not really labor of love and it's just sort of a tool for marketing tool from a large company, it can be difficult to satisfy everyone properly with it. So like you said, it was a success. Was the Escaflowne Kickstarter a success? Sure. But was it necessary for the, you know, in the end, and I'm not sure.
Exactly. No, I mean, no, it wasn't. Like, they didn't need to kickstart that in order to pay for a dub. They didn't need to kickstart that in order to release it. Like, yeah. It's like it was something that they were doing, I believe, to test a market. I'm not necessarily criticizing it. It's a business. That's what businesses do. But, like, of course, they didn't need to kickstart Escaflowne. It's a seminal title.
Right.
It's absurdly popular.
There are definitely people out there who will make the argument, oh, Kickstarter is only for things that wouldn't get money otherwise. But that argument is kind of has been out the window for quite a while when it comes to game development.
Yeah.
I mean, it's maybe this is the first for anime where someone tried to kickstart something, which was obviously a good business decision anyway. But in the game size of things, Kickstarter has for many people become just the standard way of marketing games ahead of time. And that
Here's what I didn't appreciate about it. It was basically like, we won't be able to redub this show if we don't do this Kickstarter, we can't do a new English dub. That is what I found absurd. Of course.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely a messaging and marketing thing, which is
right.
That's
what upset me about it.
They felt the need to say that, and you know, that's up to them.
Sure. I'm just saying that's what my issue with it was. But based on my conversations with them, I don't think they plan on doing that again. So it's all sort of a moot.
Well, I think that the lessons have been learned, and it, like I said, it's appropriate for some things and not for others. Now to get back to maybe my new business. You know, J Novel Club is not a Kickstarter. It's actually, we're funding everything ourselves. And I actually did, you know, when I first very early on started coming up with the idea for the J Novel Club, some people suggested to me, hey, what about kickstarting, you know, translations of late novels and that sort of thing. And I rejected that idea, actually, from the beginning. I felt that if we're going to be licensing and translating and selling product to people, that if I couldn't come up with a business plan that would be viable from an investment standpoint, then it wouldn't be a good business to start in the first place.
Sure, totally. Yeah, that makes sense. But before we get to J Novel Club, I'm dragging you back to Anime Souls for one more question. So there were I remember you telling me that you had to sell through. You had sort of an odd retail situation with all those DVDs, the Creamy Mommy and the Brother Dear Brother. And there was a in the contract where all of that stuff had to be destroyed rather than sold or rather than left
pretty much
rather than left to sit. So did that happen? Was there a grand purge?
Because it was an LLP and the LLP was disbanding, so LLP is a limited liability partnership, and so as it doesn't, the entity itself, the corporation, essentially splits up automatically after 3 years. And as part of that splitting up, whatever is left of the money, of the capital, would also be split up among the companies. But of course, the DVDs themselves are capital, right?
Right.
And then that would have been and how to do that, splitting it up, and then how that would have been valued if those DVDs had existed when we split it up would have caused tax issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So basically, rather than getting a bunch of DVDs that they have not, they, you know, Tatsunoko does not care about, you know, getting sent a couple hundred DVDs of nothing that they own, because first of all, they can't sell them later because they wouldn't have the rights to the shows anymore because the LLP didn't exist. So they would just sit there and be something that they would have to be taxed on as income. So rather than do that, it's cheaper to destroy them. Right.
Right.
So, welcome to inventory and tax situations. So that's basically what happened. And I may or may not have secretly taken a couple hundred copies that maybe or may not be sitting in an attic somewhere in northern Maine.
Okay. So with those, you'll eventually leak them one by one out to eBay for $400 each, right? Like
maybe.
That's the plan.
I wouldn't count on that, honestly.
or you specifically buried them in this one landfill in New Mexico, and then like 40 years from now, there's going to be an urban legend, and people will go dig up the Creamy Mommy, and it'll be the most.
Who knows what might happen to the mysterious Anime Souls DVDs? Whatever it is, it had nothing to do with me.
All right then. Well, that's good. I'm glad we were able to clear that up. So you moved on from Anime Souls to start J Novel Club. Now, when did you get interested in the light novel market?
I actually, you know, I've been paying attention to light novels forever since Haruhi back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's a long, long time ago, but actually one of the first jobs I ever did professionally was I helped to proofread the original Haruhi novel that was being published by Little Brown, but for a friend of mine. But in any case, I really started getting interested in noticing the opportunities in the light novel market about 2 years ago, I'd say. I had a really cool opportunity which I was given from Kadokawa to actually do interpretation for the author of Lotus War. And also the chief editor for Suzumi Haruhi on two different days. It was for this really cool Media Mix graduate school program at the University of Tokyo that they're having. And they had these 3-hour interviews with these guys for the grad students, which I helped do interpretation for. It was extremely, extremely nerve-wracking. But thanks to that, I was right there listening to these guys who really sort of almost created what light novels are. And it got me thinking about the medium more than I had previously. And then maybe a year later, when I was looking for work after Viewster, which we don't have to talk about that if you don't want to, but I really started thinking, there's this demand for light novels that I see out there that reminds me a lot of the demand for anime that was out there before Crunchyroll went legit. And I was right there for that period of time, like when, streaming anime and fan subs were really like ubiquitous on the internet, and there was no legal or almost no legal outlets for it. And there was this pent up fan demand for some kind of legal outlet for things. And I started seeing similar signs of that in the light novel industry maybe about 2 years ago. And I thought to myself, well, how is it that, how can you actually create a viable business out of this that meets people's needs, but then also sort of isn't tied to the traditional book publishing industry things that really prevent the kinds of things that the fans are looking for right now. And that's where I really started thinking about J Novel Club.
Okay. Well, so what are your, you're a fan. What are your personal favorites? Like, what do you – and you're also a businessman, so I'm assuming you're not just licensing the stuff that you like. But, like, what do you like the most? Like, what does Sam want to read?
In order to sort of – when I started looking at this seriously, I was actually – I think like a lot of anime fans, I sort of started getting more interested in light novels because of anime.
Right.
Because of shows like Gate or Konosuba, for that matter, which are being, which are based off light novels, or Danmachi, which are based off light novels, and a lot of more of anime over the past, 3 years or so has been based off light novels than manga than had been in the past. Mm-hmm. And so that really, and those, the original works between, behind those shows are sort of what interested me in the beginning. And then I sort of branched out and started reading some other genres. Of course, I'd already read Haruhi way back in the day, but I read some other books like this one called Shapple, for example. I mentioned those, which is just a comedy. It's kind of a zany cross-dressing comedy, and I personally really prefer I really like sci-fi and also harder fantasy, but I have a soft spot for novels that are just really fun and are not very light, I guess you could say, in the actual use of the term. So I really like novels where it's just easy to read and all the characters are enjoyable to me. And I think a lot of the licensing that I've done for J Novel Club has been that type of the novels, which are really just fun to read and are not, necessarily so heavy or deep or have these huge, overarching stories, but are just things that are amusing and maybe they're, sort of, they fall into some tropes, but they always attack them with a fresh perspective.
So you're not really – right now you're not really going after like huge multi-volume light novels that go 20 volumes or whatever.
Well, no, that's not the just because it goes 20 volumes doesn't mean that it has a gigantic 20 volume story arc. See, many of those super long running series from light novels, they're still mostly, episodic is the wrong term because they're not episodes, but they're volumic.
Right.
It's also the,
no,
also
the episodic is still the term, I would say.
Right. Basically, light novels, it's not as well known a fact, but for the most part, a volume of a light novel, even if it's in the middle of a 20-book series, is self-contained. It's a single story. It might have, you know, it obviously fits within a larger context of the overall character growth, etc. But you're going to have a beginning and an end and, you know, a particular theme for that particular book, even in a very long series. So, for example, one of the series that we have, I Saved Too Many Girls and Caused the Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
That
me too.
Has,
I hate it when that happens.
That's series, yeah, I know. That series has 17 volumes, but it's still very much like there's a single story every volume, and it's actually very regimental in how it's structured. Every volume there's a, you know, one to three heroines that the guy saves, and they each have their own stories, and by the end of the book all the stories are intertwined, and they somehow manage to save all the girls by the end of it by using the other girls' stories in clever ways. So so it's actually like you could probably pick up volume 3 that we're translating right now and read that. And it would probably be perfectly, you know, make plenty of sense, even if you hadn't read volumes 1 and 2, even. Not that I recommend that, but light novels are often structured like that because the way that they're sold in bookstores, you're not going to necessarily the people who are reading them are not going to necessarily start at volume 1. And that's actually quite common, where someone will pick up the latest volume of something and think it's interesting and then go and read the previous volumes.
I mean... And I guess that only really goes with, I mean, is that true for series where it's like heavily serialized?
Yes and no. It obviously varies from series to series. I would say though that for especially the ones that are sort of less, you know, heavy duty and less where the story overarching story is not as epic, they tend to be fairly self-contained. So, there are various arcs and you can just read those arcs and you'll have a good time even without that. Not that I'm suggesting necessarily go and starting light novel series in the middle, and we're not doing that, obviously. We're going to start from volume 1. But that's something that people who don't read light novels don't really understand, that they actually are designed to be relatively one volume at a time. Now, that actually has been changing recently because of the advent of web novels. So, like you said, novels that have been sort of released not volume by volume, but chapter by chapter online – those tend to be structured more in much larger arcs because people are reading them week to week.
Right. Okay. Well, that all makes sense. So the titles that you're currently translating and releasing, you said most of them are pretty sort of light and easygoing. Are you specifically how do you select titles in terms of their relation to anime? Because obviously anything with an anime is going to sell way better than anything else. So right now you got Grimgar. That's got an anime. So that must be – is that your top-selling title?
Well, it used to be.
Okay. Until what?
That statement you just made is false. I can
is
say
it?
That right now.
I'm happy. Okay, all right
then. Our best-selling title is actually the one that just came out, How a Realist Hero Rebuilt the Kingdom. As topped Grimgar, not necessarily in total sales, but it's selling at a far faster pace than Grimgar did. Now, perhaps that's because J Novel Club is more well known now, and if we had released Grimgar now instead of a month ago when we did Volume 1, then it would have sold this much. But I know that Realist Hero has had a ton of fans online who had read the fan translations of the web novel, and that has really driven sales more than anything else. So on the contrary, Occultic Nine, which also had an anime and had an anime when we were releasing it, when we started in the fall, Occultic Nine has not sold as well as Grimgar, for example. Insult overlap, but I think actually the sales are driven by word of mouth and also by in some aspects, I think Amazon reviews have really caused a lot of sales and A&N reviews for that matter. One of the books that you recently reviewed, The Faraway Paladin, which Rebecca reviewed, gave a very excellent review. Thank you.
Sure.
That started off fairly slow, but then the reviews came out, not just from A&N, but from many other sources, and the Amazon reviews are all 5 stars. Its sales have really started taking off, and it doesn't have an anime at all. I mean, it's a brand new series
for now.
Yeah, for now. Well, right. That's one of the cool things, because of its success and the way it's been reviewed. The publisher has been asking me to translate the reaction from overseas, and they're looking at that and they're trying to decide right now. Are we gonna come up with an anime proposal for it?
Nice.
And maybe so the fact that it's being so well received overseas really is directly affecting the decisions that are made in Japan. Now, I don't, there's nothing. Obviously, if anything like that would happen, it's in the extreme early planning phases right now. But who knows? A year from now, 2 years from now, we could see an anime for it.
That's really cool. You're sort of that's a very direct relationship between what people buy on J Novel Club and what gets made. But you mentioned Occultic Nine, and now okay, I will clarify my statement. I will add some caveats. A popular anime.
That's right,
and not just any old anime.
I blame the anime for the bad sales of the Occultic Nine.
No
one
liked it.
From the author of Steins Gate, I think it would have sold better.
Yeah,
and it was sort of it was unfortunate. Actually, I would put in a plug for the anime that read the book and then go watch the anime, and you'll have a much better time.
Okay, it's one of those. In other words,
yeah, I mean, like you will actually know what's going on in the first episode if you had read the book. That's my plug.
Well, the point of my original question was, it obviously makes business sense to license light novels that have anime coming or already out. And like, do you survey the anime season for the next two, however far out it's announced, 6-7 months or whatever. A year in some cases, and say, like, okay, I'm going to, which of these have light novels? I'm going to go see if I can snag some of those.
Well, right now, our business, we have relationships with two publishers in Japan, Hobby Japan and Overlap. And so, of course, every in any given anime season, there's probably two or three shows which are being based off light novels. And we did go after some of the ones from last season, like a Magical Girl Raising Project, for example, which was then picked up by, I believe, Yen. It's not that we're not trying to acquire the titles that will have anime that are coming out. But to just look at those only would really restrict what I think J Novel Club is, to have a nice variety of titles and not just have the latest, coolest thing that has an anime. So I think that it's a big factor, and it would definitely factor into, for example, how much money we might pay for it. That's, it makes sense, obviously. But actually, I'd rather license a book now, have it be popular, and then have an anime come around 2 years from now.
Cool. So,
and then,
okay.
And then we've already had it translated, and there are already fans of the series, and then we'll be the reason that the anime is popular. That'd be my goal.
So are you also checking, like, Chan boards to see, like, what's popular among fan translations? I mean, obviously, right?
I mean, well...
That makes sense.
I think checking 4chan to figure out Chan boards to figure out what are popular fan translations is probably not your best move. But
okay.
Although I personally am very popular on 4chan, it's quite surprising. There's a copy paste that someone made of me saving the light novel industry, it seems. So that's good.
Okay.
I don't know how I've managed to somehow get Reddit and 4chan and the Twitter Twitteriot, I think is how you pronounce it, all on my side at the same time. But I like to think of that. I have now conquered all the various warring states of the internet.
Congratulations.
Right. And it's only a matter of time before I'm assassinated by my second in command.
That's Yeah, right. Well, I mean, okay, I'm being flip when I say 4chan, but I mean the light novel appreciation community, the English speaking light novel community, which I don't think it's unfair to say includes Chan boards in some cases.
Yeah, actually, no, I will say that very much so. Yeah. Obviously, things that are popular with fan translations are popular because not maybe because of the fan translations, or maybe because they're popular and that's why they had translations. And actually, it's not necessarily pure popularity, but also ratings.
Right.
For example, our license of How a Realist Hero Rebuilt a Kingdom, that was driven very much so by the actual ratings and the reviews that I've read on some sites for the series itself in English and, of course, in Japanese. And so I looked at that, and then I also read, I did my due diligence and read through, most of the first volume. And it really seemed like something that was different and that we didn't have, that no one had ever licensed anything like this officially yet. So it's a sort of a different take on your isekai story where the hero isn't actually going out and fighting the Demon King himself, but first he has to fix up the kingdom's economy.
Right.
It's a thinking man's isekai, and it's silly and it has some good humor too, but then it's also has some like really serious and emotional sections in the first volume, and then starting in volume 2 and volume 3 you really get into a bunch of inter-country politics, and I know some other people have criticized it, saying it's what a high school kid would write if they're trying to write something that makes them sound smart, like they just studied Machiavelli and so they're going to put in lots of quotes of Machiavelli, but but even so, that's if you do it well, that's the kind of story which is really sort of fun to read.
There's a show called Tanya the Evil right now that is pretty much that exactly.
Right, that's also based off a light novel.
It is. Yes, it is.
Yes.
Right. So tell us a little bit. So right now I'm looking at your site and it's got like release of part 3, release of part 5. You know, you're releasing these volumes in chunks. Tell us a little bit about your release system and how you sort of came to decide this was the best way to do it.
Right. Well, we basically are a company that has two separate business models at the same time. One is this week-by-week streaming of the latest volumes of each series that we translate and put online and on our app for our members to read. And the second part is that also then once everything is done being translated, we compile them into professional ebooks and we sell them on Amazon and iBooks and Nook and Kobo and Bookwalker and pretty much anywhere that we can try and sell them to. So we do both of those at the same time. So the reason why I decided that a J Novel Club needed to have both of these business models is because there are two different reading. The fans are basically have two separate reading habits that I believe needed to satisfy both. And the one of them, the week by week reading habit, is something that mimics the release of anime and also is very much what the fan translation groups will do for web novel releases. Because often the books that are released as web novels will also be updated weekly, and then the translators will update weekly. So that kind of week by week release of not a full volume, but maybe about 1/8 of a volume, is something that I wanted to mimic and that I think helps really drive engagement and discussion. If instead of just having a volume every 2 months that just sort of comes out there, having a weekly release of new translation really helps keep the books in people's minds. And of course, you can pre-order the ebook while you're reading the pre-publication. So that's what we do. Now, every book basically is split up into somewhere between 8 and 10 parts, maybe 8, 10, depending on the length of the book and the release schedule. Mm-hmm. And we try and split them up basically on by chapters, but if there aren't enough chapters in a volume, then we'll split up a chapter into two. We try and stop at a good point. And we release them weekly, every week on a schedule, just like a Crunchyroll or just like anime streaming service. And I think people are used to that model by now, and so it's something that they understand.
Right. Yeah. No, it seems like you came to a pretty good system there. In terms of the future of this company, you basically just got started. What are you like? What kind of feedback are you getting from the fans? Obviously, your sales are doing. Are you hitting your projections? Like, how's it going so far? And what's up in 2017?
Right. Well, I think we've been at it for now 4 months, basically. And it's really been an exciting roller coaster for me because, you know, Anime Souls and these previous projects I've been working on have never really been just complete full time. And that this is 100% my business and my money.
Awesome.
My investment. So it's something that I've been putting all of my efforts into. And at the beginning, I would say that things were slower than I had thought, and it took a little while to ramp up. Especially around sort of Christmas time and November, and once we started releasing the ebooks in December, there was obviously about a 2 month window from when we started to before we started releasing our actual first ebooks, because we had to finish the translations, of course. And then once that happened, then I think our growth has really accelerated, and we're up to on target to our projections for year one, which is really excellent. In fact, I'd say some of our ebook sales targets are better than projected, and some are worse. But it'll even out in the end. And I think that basically our initial my original goals for the total number of books to be released over the first year, and then also the total number of subscribers that we'll have by the end of year one are going to be met. And that's great, because that means that I won't run out of money and have to stop.
Right.
The idea here, you know, we're not, you know, cash flow positive overall yet, but this month specific, because we have almost 7 books that were released in February, you know, we definitely sold a lot of books in February, and that's great. And of course, we have lots of deals in the works for the next couple months. New licenses. We still have some licenses that we haven't announced yet that we'll be announcing over the next couple months, and you know, more interesting partnerships, maybe more, you know, print versions, all kinds of stuff that that will be happening over the next couple months, and that'll continue to drive engagement and get people to learn more about J Novel Club and to check the books out that we have on our site.
All right, sounds good, man. This sounds like it's really going well. I gotta tell you, like, we talked a lot about Anime Souls, and like, it was an interesting experiment, but this just seems like you're filling a need. And it seems good, man. It seems good.
Yeah, that was what I wanted to do. When I first started off, I looked at the market looked at the late novel market and went, well, there's Yen Press, and then there's a couple of other companies that are dabbling in a couple of books. You know, there's Verticals doing the Bakemonogatari series. That's great. But, you know, it's just one series of books. And Viz is doing Legend of Galactic Heroes, which is amazing. But that's, you know, it. That and Naruto novels, which don't really count, in my
right. Those don't count.
A ton of books, but that, you know. And I was like, well, there's so the market could be so much bigger if people would just print, you know, would just translate the things. Mm. And so I think, thanks to us, we've now... I think we almost doubled the light novel releases per month over the past couple months.
Wow. Cool.
For the entire industry.
I know, like, Yen Press is pretty aggressive. Like, they release a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they do, like, you know, 4-5 books a month, and we're doing about 4-5 books a month right now. So,
you doubled it.
They might even do a couple more books a month than us, but we're still, you know, really increasing things significantly.
Cool. All right, man. All right, sounds good. Okay, let's get to some of these Twitter questions here.
Sure.
But actually, before we do that, you mentioned Viewster, which was your stop between Anime Souls and J Novel Club. So this was a streaming anime service that attempted a streaming anime service in a couple of different countries around the world. It didn't last too long here, but you were part of that. Any takeaway from Viewster? I mean, at this point, it just kind of seems like an also-ran in the long war for streaming domination.
I think the takeaway that the takeaway that I can give from Viewster without purposely stepping on toes would be that sometimes people want to create an anime streaming service, and sometimes people want an anime streaming service for other reasons.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. All right, let's get to these Twitter questions. Maybe that's enough about Viewster. All right, Invalid Name wants to know, do Japanese fans read light novels on phones and tablets, or do they prefer print?
I just recently... I this is a very big question, of course, because we're only doing digital. So we're doing digital ebooks and we're doing the weekly releases, and we're not doing print ourselves. But as the news came out recently that we're working with Seven Seas to put out print editions of two of our books, Occultic Nine and Grimgar, the ones with the anime.
Mm-hmm.
So I really would love to have all the books be on print eventually. We'll see. I think that actually when it comes to the users and the fans, that the two audiences, the ones that want to buy and read print books and the ones that want to read online and or buy ebooks to read on their Kindles or e-reader devices, I think that there's an intersect, but they're actually pretty separate. Like, I think there's a good chunk on both. So, for example, I'm not worried about doing print versions of our books cannibalizing our ebook sales. And I don't think print people should be worried about our digital versions cannibalizing their print sales. So as long as we can get around the cash flow issues of print and the distribution issues of print, it should be possible to do to satisfy everybody properly.
Okay.
I do think that the print market is still bigger than the ebook market by maybe a factor of two or three. It's very difficult, though, and we're going to see when we get these Grimgar numbers. It'll be an interesting experiment because this will be one of the first times ever. I think it will be the first time ever that the ebook has come out so much earlier than the actual print volume.
Right. Okay. Let's see. 4DM wants to know if there are any light novel series in Japan that you can imagine breaking out in the next few years. Realist Hero.
One I already mentioned, The Faraway Paladin, I think, is definitely breaking out right now. There's a couple other series that I think we're doing that. That and Realist Hero are the two that are really they're pretty new. I mean, they really only started publishing light novels earlier last year.
Mm-hmm.
So both of those are really gaining popularity. And let's see here. I think one other one to just mention ones that we're doing, because that's who we are. I really think that In Another World with My Smartphone. Now, I know the title makes it seem like the one of the most ludicrous isekai books that you can possibly get, but In Another World with My Smartphone, which we just started 2 weeks ago, is actually just a blast to read. Like, it is so fun and lighthearted and enjoyable stories, and I think that it has 7 volumes out in Japan right now, but the story is clearly going to continue on for a long time, and I wouldn't be surprised if that gets an anime eventually, maybe, or maybe it has a maybe it gets a manga. I think it already has a manga adaptation, which hopefully someone will license to. I really think that is a title that is going to get more popular both in the West and in Japan as we're releasing it.
Okay. The Maraximers wants to know, what's the worst sounding premise for a light novel that you were pleasantly surprised by?
Okay, well, let's see here. That I'm pleasantly surprised by... to use another one of our own books as an example, Mixed Bathing in Another Dimension. That is a fairly literal translation of the title, I should say. It's Isekai Konyoku Monogatari, which basically translates to, mixed bathing in another world. That book, like, the premise of it is that the main character is summoned to another world, and his power that he gets is that he can, anywhere at any time, open a door to a bathroom, a Japanese, standard room with a bath and a shower, and that is the power he's supposed to use to defeat the demon lord. And you think that's the pretty damn stupid premise. How can you write an entire multi-volume series on this? And it's really surprisingly inventive. Like, right in the very beginning, the hero realizes that I'm in a pseudo medieval fantasy world. They probably don't have clean water, but in my interdimensional bathroom, I have an infinite supply of clean water. I can pipe it out of my bathroom, put it into jars, and sell it to the market and earn enough money to buy better weapons and armor. And so it's like, oh, that makes sense. It's despite the idiotic premise, it's actually a really smartly constructed book, and it has lots of scenes in the bath, so that's also good too.
Right. Well, that's, what they're selling it on.
Yes, actually, that one of the complaints that I got from my readers about the series was that there are too many bath scenes, actually. And I was like, yeah, but you don't. But because the bath scenes are not just about, you know, fan service. Actually, there's like plenty of actual bathing, and it's like scrubbing. You know, how to scrub properly, and loving descriptions of the tiles and things. And I tried to explain to them that, you know, in Japanese society, the bath is very, very, very important. And so it really is actually more a love letter to Japanese baths than anything else. It's kind of amusing.
And you really felt the need to correct the record on that.
Yes, it's like, you just don't have the proper samurai spirit. That's why you're...
Okay. You see, Sam, you're the guy to sell this stuff, I think. Yeah. I think you're the guy. Which Octavia wants to know, are fans in Japan becoming bored of isekai? Isekai, for people who don't know, is the trapped in a game or another world genre. Is the genre waning in popularity? Is it a fad or is it evergreen?
Well, this is an interesting point of debate, and even in Japan, I think the debate has been raging. You ran a story, I think, a couple months ago that, you know, that a number of the newcomers' prize competitions have banned isekai stories from their, you know, from their submissions, because every story was trapped or either trapped or transferred or reincarnated. There's subgenres to isekai now. So it's, you know, there's the time travel one, there's the reincarnation one, there's the video game one, there's the trapped in any of the previous three ones. We have all different kinds of subgenres. There's whole academic papers written on it at this point. I think actually that it has started to wane in Japan, and that you're going to see less and less of the sort of standard, I'm now suddenly in a fantasy world and I have MP, and this is the very RPG-like game mechanic that we have. And I think the reason for that is that we're starting to see deconstructions of that instead. You can always sort of tell when a particular fad is on its waning edge, because instead of the standard versions of the story, you'll start to see things that use it, and it's the most common things about it as humor or tropes, or they turn it on their heads, and so there are a bunch of books like that which I think actually have the ability to take the genre, which has already sort of gotten a little stale, but then breathe new life into it by flipping it on its head. But then that's sort of always the end tale of things. So, yeah, I think we're going to see less isekai and light novels over the next couple of years. But that doesn't, you know, it'll be replaced by something else. Who knows? And I think that, on the other hand, in the West, since we've gotten some of the biggest ones like Sword Art Online and, you know, other novels like that. But I think actually the popularity of isekai type stories in the West is going to continue on for another couple of years, and it'll trail Japan by a year or two.
Right. All right. Custom Zaku wants to know if the formula for successful light novels is still pretty girl, self-insert lead, overly detailed setting, lore, mechanics, you know, world building, and so on. This is sort of a cynical question about light novels, but I guess he wants to know if that's still pretty much the prevailing story.
Well, I mean, I don't read every light novel that's being published, but yes.
Okay.
I would say that light novels are, there's a specific type of reader that is the most common, you know, reader in Japan, and those are the types of stories that tend to be what's popular in Japan. But that's not necessarily, you know, the only kind of story that's being written. For example, Faraway Paladin has no pretty girls at all. There's no the first volume of that has literally four characters. The main character, a mummified old lady, a spectral ghost, a crotchety old wizard, and a skeleton who is a kick-ass warrior. And that's it.
Cool. That sounds good. That sounds good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I actually think, like, you know, well, you already did a review on 8N, so you have to read My Little Sister Can Read Kanji. That's the one you have to review.
Also, you keep saying Paladin. Isn't it Paladin?
Sorry, it's Paladin. Did I say Far? I'm probably just pronouncing it in the Japanese way. Yeah, I'm pronouncing it in the Japanese way.
Oh, it's like Paladin, right?
Yeah, Paladin.
Yeah.
It's in Paladin.
Paladin, like.
Yeah.
The Disney film.
Yeah.
You used to play.
I'm probably going to say manga too instead of manga.
Well, no, you should say manga. That's oh, okay. the right way to say that. I'm just saying well, like that. You used to play Dungeons and Dragons, right? It's Paladin.
You know, it's funny, actually. I personally only played Dungeons and Dragons once. And actually, we have in our premium ebook edition, which I you know, I can get into if you're curious about it, but we have an exclusive interview with the author of the Faraway Paladin. And he goes on to talk about his influences for writing the book. And it's actually a lot of Dungeons and Dragons inspired games, but not Dungeons and Dragons itself.
Right.
So he does a lot of tabletop RPGs.
Warhammer, fantasy roleplay, and all that kind of shit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can read which ones that he's into.
I'll check it out.
He's very into those kinds of things. And he basically, to write the novels that he's doing, he's sort of taking the best of the things that he created as a dungeon master over the year.
Right. You know, another successful adaptation of someone's Dungeons & Dragons campaign, the television series Chaos Dragon.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Or, for that matter, the very first book considered, quote-unquote, a light novel, The Record of Lotus
War. Right, yes, of course. That's the most famous example.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I Have a 22 wants to know, if you could publish any light novel, regardless of rights issues, length, or when it was published, what would it be?
Any light novel, regardless of length,
yeah,
and sort of human possibility of translation,
yeah,
Gwyn Saga, all of it.
Oh shit! How many books is that?
137.
Right. Yeah, right.
I think. I think it was 130 was when the main story ended, and then there was another sort of 10 or 15 after that, which were basically self fan fiction. Because she didn't want to stop writing, but yeah, and of course I know that the first five books were put up by Vertical, so you know, all props to Ed. You know, one of these days, some translator has to sacrifice themselves for this cause for the rest of their life,
right?
Like, just like they just have to say, "I'm going to be translating this until I die,"
which is, you know, kind of a grim sentence.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm probably going to be translating light novels until I die. How about that?
Well, yeah, but like that's your life's work, not just one series, not just Gooey Saga, that's right. And that's, yeah, it. Yeah.
That's true. You know how many? You know, the scary thing about that series is that the author actually wrote, I believe, three volumes a year for something like 30 years.
Wow, three volumes a year?
Well, do the math. It's 130.
Sure.
Volumes.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I know she lived till she was in her, you know, in her 60s, but 70s, but. It's I actually translated the anime, little known fact.
Really?
I did the subs for the Sentai edition. I did not have anything to do with the dub, though.
Okay, because so I was going to say, have you seen it? That's like the best dub. It's so good. It's so funny.
I think they anyway, I did the subtitles, unfortunately, are very straight, so you'll have to suffer through.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. Like, no, it's good that it's on, like, it's bad that they dubbed it that way. The people like that show, and they totally fucked it up, but, like, the dub is hilarious.
Well, I have no comment on the dub other than I had nothing to do with it.
All right. Other than I want to just...
Because of that, I went and read at least the first, like, seven or eight novels of it. And, I, you know, that kind of truly epic fantasy is something that you don't really get. I don't think we'll ever see a series quite like that again, just because it's something that I don't think...
No one would take
once-in-a-bottle sort of... you know, spark that'll hit it off, and then have an author that'll take it all the way to 130 volumes.
Chiodori wants to know what the main reason was for region locking non-US residents out of Anime Souls. Was it just a rights issue or other reasons? So, he says that's the big reason he didn't participate.
Here is actually the let's get topical.
All right.
It's the same reason, I believe, that that Yuri and Ice is exports are now restricted by AVEX.
I see.
So you know, that's, you know, your current hot topic, I think, with the recent article that just came out, that their response. As someone who knows enough about rights issues, let me actually talk about that, and then I'll explain Anime Souls. So when you make a CD or a DVD or a Blu-ray of something, right, to do that, you need two types of rights. You need the mechanical rights and the synchro rights to the music that's contained on it, whether it's the music that's part of the anime or the music that's on the CD or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, so when you're putting that in Japan, the company, the entity that you need to deal with is Jazzrak, right? which is the Japanese Recording Companies Association. So when you're a CD company or a music company like AVEX, you have to play nice with Jazzrak because your main moneymaker is selling CDs of things. So now if you try and sell something overseas, the way that things work is that Jazzrak has reciprocal deals with the recording associations of all the other countries in the world, pretty much. So Jazzrak has a deal with ASCAP, and they also have a deal with the German one, whatever it's called, and the Canadian one, and the Brazilian one. And actually, you can go on their website. Literally, they have 35, 40 reciprocal deals with other companies. And therefore, if you want to sell your Japanese-made Blu-ray in America, you have to pay ASCAP. And if you don't, then Jazzrak will get angry at you. So my suspicion, and this is probably what it is with the things, is that Jazzrak or someone complained to AVEX that their products were being sold overseas, but they weren't paying the appropriate music rights to all the 40 to 45 other entities around the world in all the possible countries that it could be sold. And AVEX, rather than going through that nightmare of paperwork and such, just decided to say, no, please stop selling our stuff overseas. And that's easier than the other route. So back to Anime Souls. That's actually exactly the issue here, because Anime Souls was one of those few, very, very rare times that a Japanese company was trying to sell things directly overseas. We had to, in any country that we were trying to sell a product in, make sure to register and pay and comply with each individual country's music rights situation. And the lawyers told us that to do anything more than U.S. and Canada would be prohibitively expensive. And so we just restricted those two countries as the biggest ones and felt that once they got made and once they got funded, then third parties could sell them to other countries and we would not be – we would not have to do anything about that. And that was sort of the strategy. So it's oddly enough related to some current topics.
All right. Well, I appreciate the explanation. That's very interesting.
That's just my own assumptions. I think that considering the kind of response that AVEX gave, it sounded to me a lot like they were trying very hard to say that they never intended to sell these things overseas, even despite the fact that the fan reaction will be so negative. But they're kind of legally stuck. If they said anything like, oh, yeah, we were selling them overseas, but we decided not to, then Jazzrak can sue them for millions of dollars.
Right. Right. That's tricky. Okay. Thundersnapper wants to know, how tricky has it been to get premium ebook extras these days?
Well, since we're only dealing with two publishers, we kind of get whatever exists, which is not bad. But the light novels don't have the kind of bonus things that Blu-rays or anime does, because they're usually not that kind of not that special. So sometimes light novels will have a postcard or maybe a little bonus mini story that'll be included. For example, if you buy a first print run edition at a particular store, or they'll have pre-order bonuses, which is similar to Blu-rays, but they're usually just small paper things. So we'll sometimes get those, and oftentimes in volumes 2s or 3s or 4s, they don't have anything. So for those, we actually try and create our own premium bonuses. For Occultic 9, I'd like to pimp the premium ebooks for that. I actually went out and interviewed the master of the actual Blue Moon Cafe. I don't know. Did you watch the first anime, the first episode of that anime, Zach? Did you actually see it?
I think so.
Yeah, it's the main like cafe, funky cafe that the characters all hang out at, and it's a real place in Kichijoji. And so I went in search of it, and I took some pictures. And I interviewed the guy, and then in volume two, I actually have a nice little photo. Photo essay on Harmonica Alley, which is also in Kichijoji and also the locations for a lot of places in the book. So if you buy the premium ebook editions, you'll see my own sort of specially created for J Novel Club premium editions. And for some of our other books, we have things like translator's notes, or we look up references for you. And basically, if we don't have some kind of special image or extra short story, we try and fill in the gaps and make it worth people's while. But the cool thing about the premium ebooks is that the simple reason is that they're cheaper. If you're a premium subscriber, you're paying $6 extra a month than a normal subscriber, and that $6 gets you a premium ebook. And so the retail on Amazon is $6.99. So you're saving $1 if you at least buy 12 books a year.
Okay. All right. Final question from Mass Clever. He wants to know where he can make license requests.
Well, we have a license request on our forums. So if you just go to j-novel.club and click on forums, you can make requests there. You'll have to, of course, create an account to post. But, there are plenty of places to do that. Or our Twitter, for example. I'm very active on Twitter, and I like to reply to people. Just keep in mind that we're trying to work with as many publishers as possible, but there are plenty of publishers where it might take some time for us to end some track record of success before we can really start just licensing everything under the sun.
Okay. All right. Okay, man. Well, that does it. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. That was fascinating. I feel like I learned a lot about the business here, but we usually do when you come on. So thanks, Sam.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot, Zach, and I really would invite everybody, if they've never read a light novel before or just sort of curious what they're like, go to jnovel.club, and we have literally hundreds and hundreds of pages of free previews for all of our series out there. You can read online right now, and if you find one that is interesting to you, either buy the ebook or become a subscriber, and you've now just, like, you know, you can spend tens of hours a week reading our stuff. It's a whole new way of experiencing Japanese media, and I hope that people will check it out.
Awesome. All right. Thanks a lot, Sam. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Sam for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. I really appreciate it. And I'll see y'all next week. I'm just going to leave it like that.